The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is brought to you by Greg Morris Cards, one of the largest sports card sellers on the planet. Greg sells over 80,000 vintage and modern cards every month, including basketball, football, baseball, hockey, all sports really, and even some non-sports cards too. On top of that, every raw card receives the same hand grading that collectors have put their trust in for over 15 years. What are you waiting for? Head on over to gregmorriscards.com/auctions and check it out for yourself. What's up, everyone? This is episode 197 of the Wax Museum Podcast, where I talk about all things basketball cards from past to present to future. This is your host, Kyle, and as always, you guys can find me throughout the week on social media. My Instagram is at Wax Museum Podcast, and my Twitter is at Wax Museum PC. Well, I want to say this. We need some new basketball cards. And look, I know that's nothing new, especially for this show, but come on, Panini, we're already like 30% of the way through the current season. Meanwhile, when it comes to last season's releases, it seems like there's no end in sight, which is weird because you look at the release calendar, I think there's only one product posted for December, and that's Contenders Optic. Now, I saw a post on Ray Allen's Instagram this week where he's signing Eminence cards, so I'm assuming those are intended for the 2021 season as well. Can't we just cut some of this stuff and move on already? In the meantime, in this little hobby lull that we're in, people seem to be getting a little restless. All of a sudden, they're comparing the size of their PPP loans. Never a dull moment, I suppose. So today, I want to give you a little reprieve from all that. I've got a handful of pieces of mail I'd like to share with you real quick. And then more importantly, I want to share a fun conversation I had with a Pistons collector named Josh. You might know him as at Mitten State Collector. I really enjoy scrolling through his Instagram posts. And I have to say, after chatting with him, I appreciate them even more so now. And I think you will too. So you'll want to make sure to stay tuned for that. But first, I got to talk about the mail. And the first envelope that I want to talk about this week came from the Indiana Pacers. So I definitely have to talk about that because it's not every week that I get an envelope from the Indiana Pacers. In fact, it's been a long time since I have. Now, a lot of my envelopes will have Pacers things in them, but not directly from the Pacers. So some of you might remember that I talked about trying to collect new Pacers rookie Benedict Mathurin in episode 192 and how collecting a new rookie can be a bit of a challenge. So my solution to that, instead of trying to buy, you know, unlicensed Leaf stuff or college Panini stuff, I was trying hard not to do that and not to overspend on that. Really not to spend at all on that, to be honest. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to make some custom cards. I'm going to send them to the team. If I get them out as soon as possible, the odds of me getting them back before he develops any real signing habits, I figured they might be pretty good. So I sent those out on October 28th. And I hadn't seen a return, and I was starting to wonder a little bit, you know, maybe this isn't going to happen. A month or so passed. Well, earlier this week, I got an envelope from the Pacers. I opened it up. My cards were in there. They were, in fact, unsigned. My original envelope was in there as well. But they added in a signed 4x6 photo, and they also had their little certificate of authenticity in there. So I can, even though that's not my cards, I consider that to be a huge win. Very happy about that. I mean, just the cost of making the cards and a couple postage stamps was all that it set me back, and it made for an exciting mail day. So I put that up on my YouTube. You want to check that out. I've got the whole, you know, me taking the cards out, not knowing what was going to happen, the whole suspense, all of it's there if you want to see more of that. Now, I also got three or four really nice care packages this week. I've gotten a lot of nice stuff from listeners, and I just want you to know I don't take that for granted. I really appreciate everyone taking the time to do that. So I want to go through, even though I've shouted these people out already on social media, I want to thank Jeff, who goes by at Dallas Maverick Sports Cards. He sent me an exclusive TJ Warren that I hadn't seen, and then some illusion stuff for a binder that I've been thinking about making, and that might be the final push. I might actually make that page. I think I'm going to put old showcase cards in there from the 90s and 2000s, and then the illusions cards in there because they kind of look similar. I know they're not definitely not the same quality, but they look similar enough. I think that'd be a cool way to narrate the history of the franchise, or at least portions of it. The next package came from Matt, aka Sports Card Legend. He sent me a really good mix of Pacer stuff, including a variation of the George Hill stat line patch, or really jersey relic, I should say, that I talked about recently. This one was one I hadn't seen before, even though it was serial numbered with some of the rest of them. It's an all yellow piece, so I thought that was pretty cool. I like different stuff like that. Another listener, Denny's Cards, sent me a nice variety of cards that he had pulled, including a couple of really nice Chris Duarte rookies. One of them was from Obsidian. I really liked that one. They were both numbered 50. On top of that, he added a Taco Bell gift card because he said, someone needs to pay Kyle in burritos, so trust me, that will be put to good use, so thank you, Denny. And then finally, I received a customized Pacers Rip Gods, yes, you heard that right, Rip Gods repack product ordered by a listener named John. And I'll be honest, up until this week, it looked like the Rip Gods were, you know, they had disappeared. Maybe they were victims of some sort of tragic breaking accident. We hadn't really seen or heard from them in a while. Or maybe they just lost their password then when they got a new phone this summer. You know, who knows what happened. Anyway, though, they're back, and John ordered a custom repack from them. And if this doesn't make sense, you'll see a picture of it on social media. You'll see the video on YouTube. But it had like six different packages in it for me, all nice Pacer stuff that had been curated. And then also a CD of some NBA guys that were trying their hardest to cross over into the music world. It's just a perfect time capsule of the 1994 of that era. And it was called B-Ball's Best Kept Secret. So I got a good kick out of that. Even though it was Rip Gods branded, thank you, John. I know you put a lot of time and effort into creating that, and I got a good kick out of that as well. And really, everyone that sent to me this week did. They put a lot of time and effort into that. I appreciate that. All of them were posted online in some capacity, be it social media or YouTube already, but I wanted to make sure to thank these guys once again. All right, before I move into today's conversation, I want to take a moment to remind you how you can support this show. As you guys know, there are costs that go into producing a podcast. One of my goals is to always keep the show itself free. As a result, I've signed up for affiliate programs with eBay and Fanatics. If you'd like to help support the show in this way, go to www.waxmuseumpodcast.com, click whatever store you need to go to, shop as planned, and the show gets a small commission in the process. Once again, that's www.waxmuseumpodcast.com.
Hustle, grind, spam, profit. We're the Rip Gods. You're listening to the Wax Museum Podcast.
Okay, so joining me today is someone that collects a team and a player that I absolutely hated for years. With that being said, the two of us get along quite well, and I'm excited to finally have him on the show. You might know him from Instagram as at Mitten State Collector, where he mentioned in a post a couple weeks ago that an episode of this show made him stop his lawnmower. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Maybe the two of us will stop some mowers with our conversation today. Josh, how's it going, man?
Doing really well, Kyle. Thanks for having me on. I've been listening to your show for a while, and it's kind of weird to be on this side of the process.
Some of guests will reach out to me, and they've said, you know what, I hate listening to myself. I said, well, welcome to my turmoil from week to week in editing, right? Otherwise, I'd try not to listen to it, but editing, got to listen to it. Okay, so even though we've chatted quite a bit, like a lot of guests that I've had on the show, I've never really asked you about your Pistons fandom or your collecting origins. Now, with a name like Mitten State, I think it's safe to assume that you're from Michigan. Is that correct?
Yeah, born and raised. And, you know, if everyone would just pull up their handy map of Michigan, which doubles as probably your right hand, you can point right about to the middle of the palm. And that's where I live now.
So you latched on to the Pistons above other things, above the Tigers, above the Lions, right? So we're going to talk a lot about that today. We're going to have to get some context, though, before we get too far in, because the Pistons have a lengthy history that predates the Mitten State. There are probably some people listening today that don't know that the team originated in Fort Wayne, Indiana, but that was long before our time. So just for reference, Josh, how old are you? You don't look like, I know everyone can't see you. You don't look like a Fort Wayne Pistons fan.
I am not. No, I'm 32, going to be 33 next month.
Definitely not a Fort Wayne fan, but that also puts you kind of in a unique spot because you missed out on the Bad Boys titles. Come to think of it, I don't even think you weren't even alive, right? Because that was 89 and 90.
Yeah, for the 90, I was alive, but not really paying close attention.
Like 2 months old, maybe somewhere around that range, right? So you were there. Maybe you did see it and you just don't remember it. But I'm sure some of that enthusiasm, though, from those teams carried over. And I don't want to assume, though, but how exactly did you become a basketball fan?
Yeah, growing up in Michigan, you know, really, if you were lucky that you had all four pro sport teams, you know, right in Detroit there. And I was actually born in Detroit. My folks, we lived down there for several years after I was born, and then moved up to Saginaw, which is significant for a couple of NBA-related reasons, which I can talk about later. But really, it just came down to all four of those sports. They were on when the season was right, and for whatever reason, basketball just stuck out to me as a game I really just loved watching. I know people call soccer the beautiful game, but to me, if you're watching basketball played at a high level, it's fantastic. It's magical. And so that's really what stuck out to me, was watching the Pistons. And luckily for us, the first person I remember on a Pistons team is Grant Hill. And prime Grant Hill was, I mean, everyone, I think, knows at least casually what he was doing before he had his unfortunate injuries. And so it's pretty easy to fall in love with a sport that has a team that has someone of the caliber of Grant Hill.
It's interesting. We'll get into it later, but you ended up collecting a player that was traded for Grant Hill. Now, I mentioned the Tigers and the Lions out there. I just realized you said four sports. Hockey is so far in the back of my mind. So sorry to all the Red Wings fans out there, all the hockey fans out there. Okay, so now that we have all that background, let's steer things more towards cards. Take some time to sort of narrate your hobby history for us. I'd love to know a lot more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. My introduction to cards came through, my dad collected casually when he was a kid, but my Uncle Bill is a huge baseball fan, collected cards starting late 60s all the way through the mid 80s. And I actually have, I'm looking at off screen here, a lot of his collection that's sitting in a couple giant boxes I've been sorting through a little bit more intentionally in the last couple of years. And going over to his house when I was growing up, he would always have some of them he was going through. He was very meticulous in sorting and took really good care of his cards, for the age. I mean, you're not going to get a 10, you're not going to gem anything if you graded it, but it wasn't in the bicycle spokes. And so really seeing how he approached his collecting of putting together sets and organizing by teams, and that really appealed to me. And just like helping him sort cards was oddly calming. I think that's one of those, like, if you know feelings,
right?
If you enjoy putting pieces of cardboard in a numerical order, you may be a card collector, right? Like that's
right,
one of those things. And that was something I enjoyed doing. And as I got older, took my lawn mowing money. We were lucky to have a card shop not too far from where I grew up. And so I would use my allowance and card mowing or lawn mowing money to buy cards, usually early 90s, late 80s packs, your classical junk wax era packs, just because you get the most cards for your buck and still recognize a lot of the players' names. So for me, if I got a Detroit player, whether it's 88 Dunross baseball or early 90s, Skybox for basketball, it was all the same to me. It was just fun to pull someone from the Pistons, from the Tigers, or whoever the hot player of that set was.
Okay, so continuing on from there, so you know, you're growing up, you're going to the card shop. This is kind of the part of everyone's story where life gets in the way, and I don't want to assume. Tell me, how did you navigate from there to where you are now? Because obviously it's progressed.
Yeah, I tapered off actually probably earlier than a lot of other folks I know, in the sense that it was probably like a freshman in high school when I actually dropped more off of buying new cards. And that was because I was involved in playing a couple different sports and eventually getting my first job and just, you know, working and getting ready towards college and, you know, all of those things. And on top of that, in Michigan, I think a lot of folks our age, Kyle, remember the recession and all that of 2007, 2008. And in Michigan, it was really starting even a couple of years before that. And, you know, the local card shop had closed up by then. And so it was kind of one of those, I didn't really have a place to go get cards easily. I wasn't on eBay back then. I wasn't really using message boards except to get like addresses for through the mail autos. You know, I wasn't super savvy in that space. And so when that kind of easy access dried up, I just kind of pivoted over to, you know, doing other things. And so my collection sat pretty much untouched in my parents' basement until about 5-6 years ago. I had my interest re-sparked because a friend of mine who we were roommates for a while, and he got a job in the Detroit area. He ended up with playoff tickets in 2016 when the Pistons were playing the Cavaliers. And we had high hopes that we might be able to scratch out a playoff win and when they came back to the Palace. And we were very wrong about that. But in hindsight, we got to see LeBron James at probably his playoff peak of, height of his dialed in on bringing a title back to Cleveland, laser focus. And so in hindsight, that's kind of cool to say we had to see one of those games. But more relevant to collecting is that got me thinking more about, like, oh yeah, like LeBron, he's still in the league. And, you know, when I left, he was still just a rookie. I shouldn't say left. When I stopped actively collecting, he was still a rookie. But and so next time I was in my parents' house, I got some of the cards out. I took them back to my home and I started going through them, and it just kind of snowballed from there.
I'm trying to think of that 2016 Piston squad. And I guess the way I do that is go back through sets and cards. And I cannot even think who was on that 2016 Piston squad. Very forgettable squad, I guess. Maybe you've got some of those. There you go. Is that Tobias?
Yeah, Tobias Harris. That was the year that we had Brandon Jennings, that he had that spurt where it was like, oh, this is the guy that was a first-round draft pick. He's killing it. He's crushing it. And then he got hurt, traded for Reggie Jackson, thought we had some good chemistry with him. Tobias Harris, I thought, he is a really good player. I thought he'd be good with the Pistons. And, of course, we got Boban out of that deal as well, and that was exciting. But yeah, that was it was one of those scrappy teams. I think that every franchise, like you in hindsight, like, oh, it was a fun team because none of those guys should have worked together. And, you know, it wasn't a fun team in the way that the 2004 Pistons were a fun team.
Right. Primarily being successful.
Yeah. The thing that counts the most, but in hindsight though, it was, you know, it was a team that if you turned them on, you're going to be entertained. In a way that unfortunately I don't feel entertained by our current squad.
Well, yeah, we're in a similar boat there. Was Josh Smith on that team? For some reason, I am thinking of Josh Smith around that time.
That was afterwards. So 2016, I believe, was the last year of the Van Gundy regime, where he was both coach and GM. That may have been the build a effing wall.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Now it's all coming back to me. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, you have the advantage. You came back right before, you know, a couple years before this whole Zion boom and pandemic boom. And, you know, just in those few years alone, I'm sure you were able to amass a pretty good head start on what, you know, we were about to face that we had no idea. Now, like everyone else, though, I'm sure it took some time to figure out how you wanted to focus your collection. And for all I know, maybe you're still feeling that out, and that's okay. But when someone visits your Instagram page, it seems like you got it figured out because they'll see your bio, which states collector of Ben Wallace plus 90s and 2000s Detroit Pistons, and then occasional posts of other Detroit players. And I guess that last part kind of gives you the leeway there. If you want to post a Sekou or a Sadiq Bey, I don't think I've seen any Cade on there, but you know, maybe something in the future. Are you excited about Cade, or how are you feeling about Cade right now?
You know, I was a big fan of that pick. I thought Cade has, you know, right. You're only seeing guys hopefully a little bit polished on their media appearances. And he was polished in a way that I thought showed that he was mature enough to handle the role of like, hey, you're a number one pick on a team that has not had much to be happy about for a long time, but also has a very strong history and legacy of championship aspirations and a lot of Hall of Famers, a lot of guys from the 2004 team still heavily involved in the Pistons organization, if they're not leading another organization. I mean, you see Darvin Ham is coaching the Lakers. Shout out to Darvin Ham, who is a native of Saginaw. Was well aware of him and his basketball talent before he even went to Texas Tech. Also, you know, Chauncey over in Portland now. So there was a lot of guys, you know, on that team that had strong leadership. And I think Cade can continue that tradition. There's something missing right now, and I'm not sure what it is. It's something that you'd like to just see somebody be able to get a spark and just really, you know, be able to have that take over a game mentality. And I think Cade can get there. So I'm optimistic about that. Jaden Ivey's been very exciting so far. So that tandem has a lot of promise. But one thing I will say is maybe a warning to folks who are thinking about investing in Pistons, just don't do it. The Sekou, we mentioned Sekou Doumbouya. He was a Piston that I looked at his first couple of games. He looked very good for a kid. He was 18, right? Like only coming over a couple months in the league and starts, you know, dropping double doubles against the likes of Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James. And you think this kid's got a bright future. Well, it can flame out pretty quickly if they're not in the right organizational structure. And in the Pistons, the way they're building, I don't think you're going to see a guy who's going to be a 25-10 type player. I think you're going to see a lot of guys who are in that like 15 to 20 points per game range, but any one of them can go off on a given night, which is going to make them very appealing to people who want to invest in a Piston because they think, wow, Sadiq Bey dropped 50 points last season. And, where is that this year? Right. Like,
right.
It's just the way that the team has always been built. Even back in the Bad Boys era, Isaiah Thomas was a certified superstar relative to his peers, and it's next to no Hobby Love in the sense, you know, outside of Detroit fans, I would say. So it's a little bit of an interesting situation as it relates to the disconnect, I think, between the team and the success the team has had and the individual players, and then also how that relates in the hobby. And I'm happy that they're not investable, right? Like that makes
That's great for you.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love being able to go out and find cards at reasonable prices.
Yeah, well, especially now, you know, with Cade going down, you've got Ivy. Ivy's numbers are probably going to be a little bit inflated because there's no Cade there at the moment. So you're running into that 2 years in a row. I'm kind of tasting that for the first time because I haven't really had a Pacers rookie in a long time that I've been super excited about. Even Paul George was not a big deal. You know, he was the number 10 pick. He scored like 10 points per game his rookie year. But Benedict Mathurin, you know, he's looking good. And I'm like, I'm already looking at these few cards that are out there. I know I talked about on the show already, but I'm like, man, this is going to cost me. And there's a lot of people still in that invest mindset. So I hope those of you that are buying them, I hope you really like Benedict Mathurin because the Pacers and the Pistons, kind of what you described there is exactly the same thing that I've seen with the Pacers. So it's interesting. Our franchises are very similar in a lot of ways. But for right now, we don't see Cade or we don't see Jaden on that Instagram line. So we're going to, you know, just move aside from them for right now. And let's go through your three PCs in order. So you've got Ben Wallace, right? That's the first one that we'll start with here. And from reading your post, I believe there's a Ben Wallace binder that exists somewhere. I hear about the binder. I don't, occasionally I think I see a page of it. Now you're holding it up here. Okay, so we know it exists. Tell me about what Ben Wallace cards you pursue and you know, what specifically makes its way into that binder.
Sure. So when I got back, I really was kind of all over the place. A lot of it was just like, the first time I jumped on eBay looking for cards was more to see just what my uncle's cards, my uncle's collection, what they might be worth. And then of course, eBay is like, hey, we see you're looking at cards, might we suggest, and then any number of related things. And actually for once, good or bad, they were actually related to what I was looking at, which is mostly Detroit players. Right. And so of course you go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, the algorithms aren't always all that bad, unfortunately.
It's very true. And actually, they've done a pretty decent job on Instagram as well. A lot of people I talk to regularly now, because I know I was fairly late to the Instagram game, I think. I was kind of a loner when I came back. I really just enjoyed doing it for myself. And I'd, you know, kind of lurk on Blowout, or back when Beckett was still had their message boards, I'd lurk on there. Because it was just something I enjoyed doing for myself, right? I enjoyed sorting. I enjoyed doing all of that. And so once I came across some cards of Ben, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And it eventually sent me down to a very fortuitous rabbit hole, because I came across a listing on eBay for one of Ben Wallace's Logo Man cards. And I was like, whoa, this is super cool. It's super rare. It's shiny. It's all of the things that, like, you know, 13-year-old me would have not been able to afford or even find back when it would have came. Well, I've been a little bit embarrassed. And so it happened to be fairly soon after I joined Instagram. And like less than a week after I saw this card, I saw the account that had the card listed. And it's, I want to shout out Big Ben PC, Jake, like quintessential hobby friend that, you know, PC's the same people that you do. He's been so helpful in like getting my collection in a more orderly fashion. And he kind of was part of the inspiration for the Ben binder, because he's working on and is almost completed, except for a couple one of ones, the entire Topps and Bowman run of Ben Wallace's cards from his first Topps issue in 1999, all the way through to when Topps lost the license in 2009.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And seeing his stuff, I was like, man, that's a really cool project. I'd like to, you know, emulate that. And so I started off with just the Topps Chrome cards and the refractors and then the golds. And then earlier this year, I think it was because I finished my gold run and I just hadn't really seen any new Topps Chrome Ben cards that I didn't have, because the only ones I need are very rare. I need this 2006 X-Fractor, which is out of 10, and this 2008 Red Refractor out of 5. And I just, I mean, I'm
those don't show up. Yeah, I rarely ever see any of those for any player.
Yeah, you know, and I actually, I saw the second ever copy of a 2006 X-Fractor on another account about a month ago, and a person wasn't selling, so 20% of those are now locked up. Need to find one of the other 8. But anyways, he was somebody, once I saw how he had his collection organized with that and that focus, I was like, you know, he's had a lot of fun putting together his set. I want to try that challenge as well. I expanded mine a little bit beyond his. He was just focused on the base cards and then the accompanying parallels. I went as far as to do the, if I can find them, any of the first 3 years of his Topps cards. They have the MVP promo challenge, which I don't know if folks are super familiar with Ben Wallace's career. Not really an MVP candidate in 2009 or 1999, 2000, 2001. So I'm not sure how many of those are really out there. I think it's fairly common knowledge. It's estimated around 100 were printed of each player, and probably significantly fewer than that are floating out somewhere.
I always wonder if I pulled one of those as a kid, it probably got tossed or it became a bookmark or something. You know, that kind of did those kind of things.
Yeah. So getting back to your original question, Kyle, yeah, the Ben Binder, though, is really just, it's all of his Topps and Bowman, both paper and chrome cards. I have them arranged sequentially, and I'm hoping, I didn't leave room for one of ones in there because I'm not super optimistic that I would be able to land anymore.
Jake's got them, right?
He does. He's got a tremendous collection of the one of ones, and actually part of our negotiating over who collects what in there is that he has five of the super fractors for Ben. So like, I was like, I'm not going to fight him for those because he's also been collecting for a long time. You know, I know I respect his collection and him way too much to try to bid him up on any of those because something like that really deserves to be together. But yeah, that's the Ben Binder.
So you mentioned Ben collectors, and I was going to bring that up later, so I might as well bring it up now. It sounds like at least the two of you have a pretty good working relationship and you know, all right, I'll go for this, or I like this stuff more. But I know there's probably a handful of you know, big Ben Wallace collectors. So for the rest of them, do you have a big group, or is it just like, let's, you know, me and Jake work together and then we duke it out with the rest of them on eBay? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, you make it sound like it's collusion, but it's
not collusion. Yeah, it, no.
But in serious, there's a handful of other guys I know that their primary collecting focus is Ben Wallace. But most of the folks I know who are buying or going after Ben Wallace cards are Pistons team collectors, mm-hmm. and they're only interested in Ben's Pistons years cards. And it's kind of interesting because, if you don't mind me jumping over to some of the touching on the 90s part of my collection.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, as many people may or may not know, the 2004 Pistons, only one of them was drafted by the Pistons, and that's Tayshaun Prince. The other four all came over via trade or free agent signing.
Or were gifted to them. Yeah. In the case of Rasheed Wallace, but we won't, you know, go into all that.
Yeah. Thank you to the Hawks. That was a good rental for them and for us. But so because none of them were drafted by the Pistons, a lot of the Pistons collectors don't really go for their rookie stuff or their car, those other four starters from the first couple of years of their careers. And since I don't mind having rookie cards, period, no matter what their team, that's kind of left things with a little bit less competition to lock down some of the more interesting rare cards for those players. And so that's kind of how I fell into some of the 90s stuff. I didn't set out to collect it originally. Even when I started out buying packs and such, the shop I went to was pretty small. They didn't have, you know, I wasn't lucky enough to just glimpse upon, you know, a PMG red in the display case or have, you know, boxes of, you know, Skybox premium, you know, laying around on their shelves. They were a pretty low key affair. So I didn't really see a lot of those cards until later on, until maybe 2018, 2019. And just seeing the price tags attached to them kind of scared me off at first, and also not really wanting to deviate from my, you know, early on Ben Wallace and other Pistons from the 2004 team, from collecting them during their playing years in Detroit. Mm-hmm. So that kind of opened up that lane. And then as I got a little bit more confident in my collecting and kind of understanding what cards are truly rare and I may or may not see again, I've decided, well, I'm going to start taking the leap to try to lock down some of these rare cards. And also the general pandemic boom and interest in card collecting pushed up values of some of my uncle's stuff, the vintage stuff, that allowed me to take those and consolidate, you know, to some of these other really rare cards. And I'm incredibly lucky that things played out as they did, because I mean, it's the high end world like that is just a totally different animal. I'm not super competent in that space. And, you know, it's something where I'm like, man, it's really cool to have these cards, but like I love being in the lane of a 2004 Pistons team collector and then focusing on Ben Wallace's entire playing career. That's where I'm most comfortable. And I think that's where I'm going to keep hanging out as a collector in the coming years.
Yeah. We referenced earlier the fact that you came back before the pandemic and then now also having your uncle's, his old cards, it's kind of like card equity that really, even though prices went up for everything else, you had this card equity that a lot of people that were just coming in didn't have. So that worked out well for you, and you used it to build your PC. Now, you mentioned that you collect the duration of Ben Wallace's career. You talked about the rookie stuff. You talked about the first couple years where I think he was with Washington and then with Orlando. But I'm going to ask you a question that I ask Vinny, the Patrick Ewing collector, where I said, hey, you know, what do you think about the Sonic stuff and the Magic stuff? So for you, it would be more so the Cavs and Bulls stuff. He didn't have any Suns cards. He was only there like 3 weeks. So, or maybe he did.
Suns uniform though.
Okay. Tell me about that one. I'm not familiar with that.
So the 2009 is one of my favorite cards. It's so very interesting. So he's pictured in a Cavs uniform. Mm-hmm. It's listed as a member of the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
But he played the 2009-10 season in Detroit.
Right.
Both of the things that are on the card are not true.
Right.
very fitting that that's his last card in a Topps set.
Yeah.
It's just kind of this mishmash of, you know, of identities. And I really don't mind collecting him regardless of what uniform he's wearing. To me, the appeal of Ben Wallace is that he is by far the most accomplished undrafted player in the modern era. He overcame a whole ton of obstacles. I mean, even now, there's a little bit of like revision going around during his playing days. You know, he's billed at being 6'9" and all of this, and people are like, he's actually closer to like 6'7", which is even more impressive. That basically you have a guy who's the size of a small forward that was defending, you know, the last hurrah of the dominant post players, your Shaqs, your Yaos, Dikembe Mutombo, you know, all of those guys. And, you know, it just kind of grows your respect even more for someone like that, because, you know, the 96 draft class is famously ridiculously comically stacked, even amongst the guys who people don't really remember as much, like John Wallace, for example. Still a tremendous player, had a great career, you know, and so there was just a lot going on there. And so him being connected to that rookie cohort is how I'll phrase it, not draft class, but rookie cohort of 96, is another great tie into some basketball history. And I just enjoy that. And one of the things I think probably might make me a little bit unique as a Pistons fan is when Ben left after the 05-06 season to sign in Chicago. I really didn't fault him for that. And I also didn't fault the Pistons for letting him go, even though wasn't, in hindsight, it really worked out great for either player, aside for the money that Ben got, that he deserved, like fully earned that big payout, but also for the Pistons, probably a smart move not to pay a 30 at the time going on 32-year-old undersized center. Giving him a long-term deal, you know, notoriously in the most probably physically demanding position on the court.
And the league's moving more towards offense. It doesn't necessarily fit his style. So,
yeah. And you know, it's hard to look at the Pistons going out in the conference finals those next couple seasons and thinking, man, if Ben had been there, could they have gotten back to the NBA finals and had one more shot at winning it? It's a tempting scenario, but I ultimately blame Darko more for that than I do Ben Wallace.
Well, eventually Ben did make it back to Detroit, though, for his final three seasons, this time wearing the number 6. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like Panini really loves those number 6 photos still. It's weird to me. And I didn't realize until I looked it up that he was there 3 years wearing that number. It just felt like such a short time, but it's weird every time I see one of those cards. You know, maybe they already have the rights to those photos and they just don't want to buy new ones, but seems like they use a lot of those. Am I correct there?
Yeah, they have used 3 on a couple of cards. It's very odd how they do it. The thing that bugs me more than 6, honestly, is that every single photo they use of him is him dribbling or him shooting. And it's like, two things Ben Wallace was not known for. He is not a great ball handler. I mean, he was competent, but he wasn't, you know, he's not a, Isaiah Thomas level guy. And also he was not known for his offense or his shooting. So I'd like to see them at least, you know, he pulled on a lot of rebounds. You can find one of him grabbing a board. But yeah, he went to number six because Rodney Stuckey had started wearing number three for the Pistons while he was playing in Cleveland, I believe. And then he's also spoken in interviews about his admiration for Bill Russell. And so okay. Six, I believe he hasn't come out and said explicitly that six was in honor of Russell. But I think that's a pretty safe connection to make.
Yeah, I'd never even thought of that. That's pretty interesting. So we've mentioned several avenues where you're looking for Ben Wallace cards, be it eBay, be it Instagram. Now, another place I know that you use is ComC, because you mentioned it specifically in your Instagram. And this is where the mower part from the intro comes in. So connect the pieces for everyone here at home. What does your lawnmower have to do with ComC?
So I do a lot of my my podcast listening while I'm out mowing the lawn or doing yard work. And there was an insert that you mentioned, Kyle, as being one that you thought was particularly catchy, or I have having a lot of eye appeal, and that's the Fleer Showcase Hot Hands insert. And this was a card or a set that Ben Wallace is in, and I had been watching his card on ComC for some time. And you know, the individual who was selling it or had it listed on ComC had a fairly ambitious price in my mind for that card relative to other cards that I thought were of similar quality for Ben. And you happened to mention it on one of your shows. And as I was mowing, I was thinking, son of a gun, someone else is going to be hearing this thinking, wow, if Kyle thinks this is a pretty cool card, it probably is a pretty cool card. So I should go see what's out there for this insert set. So I before, you know, my mind racing against an imagined foe, I stopped my mower, I jumped on my my phone, and unfortunately that card had been sold on ComC to some lucky individual, but I was able to track down a copy earlier this year in a trade, so ultimately it worked out.
Well, I'm glad you got that. I'm also flattered that you feel like I have that kind of influence, but thankfully there's not a huge rush on Pacers cards, so I don't think it's too strong of an influence out there. But whether you're driving or working or mowing and you're listening to this episode, stop for a moment. This is probably as good a time as any to remind you that this show is brought to you in part by ComC.com, your home for buying, selling, and flipping all types of trading cards. Their consignment marketplace is home to over 28 million cards across all sports, genres, and eras. With a ComC.com account, you can purchase cards from different sellers over time, ship them home together later, or immediately reprice them for sale on the ComC marketplace. For more info, you can check them out on social media under the handle at CheckOutMyCards. Okay, we'll come back to Ben in a little bit when we talk about the 2000s Pistons. And we're going to go through these next two a little bit quicker here, but because we've already touched on them some already. But the second collection in your profile mentions the 1990s Pistons. And to me, it's a guy, you know, that's a guy that you already mentioned. That's Grant Hill, and only Grant Hill, right? That's what I think of when I think of 90s Pistons. I think of the teal. But then I was thinking about some of those Bad Boys Pistons, and I realized, you know, Isaiah and Bill Laimbeer played until 94. Dumars played until 99. Then, of course, he was in the front office. So it's kind of convenient to overlap those there, and that allows you to collect guys from two different eras of Pistons basketball. So I'm thinking that's the mindset there, but I want you to talk a little bit more about that and then tell me what kind of pieces of those players are you looking for?
And honestly, I've moved a little bit off of my 90s kick more recently just because of seeing how prices, I mean, I feel like one of the reoccurring themes for a lot of the card hobby in the last couple of years have been like, you thought those were high. Look at them now, you know, and repeat that every 3 to 4 months until you're like, okay, we've seen enough here.
At some point, it's got to get to the top, though.
Yeah, and I'm lucky to own, you know, at one point I had 7 or 8 cards that, you know, were incredibly rare cards that I would have never thought I could have owned, and I had an opportunity to trade those for a 1997 Joe Dumars PMG Red. And it's the kind of deal where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm giving up so much. But then you're also thinking, here's a card that when you set out to, you know, set out, and for me setting out as a reinvigorated collector, you know, 5 years ago. One, you rarely see them, which is to me the biggest part. You know, that's one of the fun things, frustrating, but also fun things for me in the hobby, is that doesn't matter how much money you have, if you can't find the card,
it's the hunt.
Can't get the card.
Right.
And, you know, and so there is a little bit of an element of like being able to level the playing field there, that if you, you know, if you're a nice, I think if you're fundamentally a nice person and respectful and try to be polite and helpful to others in the hobby, that'll come back to you. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that maybe that came back to me in a very big way, being able to pull off a deal like that. And so that's a card that I'm going to hold on to really as long as I can financially justify it. I do have two young kids at home, and I assume they have hopes and dreams of their own one day. And if a card like that can facilitate their hopes and dreams, well, I think that would probably go farther towards, you know, Disney World than like Ben Wallace X-Fractor ever will. So.
And you get your, you have your time with that card. So
yeah.
It's not like you didn't enjoy it and you're giving up the entire essence of that card. So, you know, just consider it that way. There's a time and a place for everything. So like you alluded to there, you know, that it might be time to move on from that at some point.
Yeah. And for me, with a lot of the 90s, you know, Joe Dumars, have memories of him as a player, and also, you know, a lot of credit. He's the architect of that 2004 team. And so he's also one of my dad's favorite players growing up. So there's a lot of reasons why I really like having a Dumars card. And I have some other really nice patches of him too. So it's not about, you know, for me, it's about if you can give up a specific card of a player, okay, you know, if it makes sense for you to accomplish other goals, you should do it. And I, you know, for me, I have these other really nice cards of his that help tell the story of who he was, and also give me that tangible piece of memorabilia that's like, hey, here's a connection to a guy who did a lot of great stuff for your favorite team. And I think that's an important way to look at things, is that, you know, ultimately, the cards are helping jog these great memories. Mm-hmm. And the 2004 team for me is just, I mean, it's one of those things that it makes me just so, it's a core sports memory for me as a fan. Sorry to rub it in.
I was about to say, I am incredibly jealous of the fact that you have a 2000s title.
For sports, is such a competitive thing. Collecting cards can be very competitive, but to channel Rasheed Wallace a little bit, both teams played hard in that series. To try to put it in perspective, you know, it was the only title that we had there. We had some, both Pacers and Pistons had some just phenomenal teams, phenomenal individual players, you know, and so, you know, as an adult, I can look back on that with a little bit more respect towards mm-hmm. what it took for both player, you know, both teams to even get there in the first place. It's such an incredibly competitive league. It's something I think that you have to be an adult to really understand, you know, for these guys, it's their profession. It goes beyond our simple fandom, any level of appreciation we can have for their talents on the court, for the entertainment they provide. You know, no matter how much we wanted as fans, they wanted a thousand times more as a player to, you know, be the one to accept the trophy. And some of that perspective has helped, help me get over a lot of the what ifs around, you know, mm-hmm. again, I mentioned, you know, drafting Darko, and there's been some of that revisionist talk lately around what if they drafted Carmelo and all of that. And
God forbid you get more rings. You brought us into the 2000s there, and you mentioned all of the things that these guys do for us on the court. Let's talk about the time they went off the court as far as our two teams go. So we've got this brawl, right? I mean, I have to address it since you're on here. And I've got to hear your side of things, your perspective on the brawl, your hate for Reggie Miller. This is your time. You know, you post that card of Tayshaun blocking Reggie Miller. This is your time to elaborate on that and tell me all about how much you hated him.
You know, again, this is in the moment of being what was I, 15 when that happened? I was incredibly bitter toward that Ron Artest won Defensive Player of the Year in 2004. Mm-hmm. I will say to my dying breath that there is zero reason that he deserved that award other than narrative reasons. If you're looking at any of the stats, I think it's very clear to any impartial observer that Ben had a superior defensive campaign, but I digress.
And an amazing help defender in the middle, but I digress.
Yeah.
But no, I guess, I mean, he won what, 3 out of 4, right?
He won 4 out of 5.
Okay.
If he had gotten that way, and you know, to be fair to some other folks, later the last couple were a little bit closer in terms of, you know, stats. But anyways, it would have been much cooler to say an undrafted guy was the only five-time consecutive winner of that award.
Yeah.
But again, that's all just, you know, things that neither here or there. So anyways, going back to our test for a moment, there was already a little bit of that sense of like, man, this guy didn't deserve it. He's just, you know, he's antagonistic. He's a troublemaker. He's, you know, they couldn't beat him on the court. So now they're trying to start stuff to derail them that way. And, you know, listening to some of the more recent interviews from folks, like on the All the Smoke podcast, they've talked to several players from both the Pacers and Pistons about that. And, it paints a more nuanced view of what really happened there. I definitely, after watching Jermaine O'Neal's documentary, I'm much more receptive to the idea that the fans played a much bigger role in that than initially thought and probably initially reported. You know, being in Michigan, a lot of it was, oh, look at the guys on the court. They couldn't, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, getting into some of the real details around, you know, failure to have appropriate security precautions for both players and fans, I think it really is something that, you know, the NBA just couldn't anticipate. I mean, think back to the 80s and before. I mean, across all the sports, it was very common to have fans and players mixing at some level on the playing fields. And so, you know, they probably always anticipated that folks would be respectful of those boundaries. But when you have a heated rivalry and you have individuals who don't respect and don't understand the boundary between this is entertainment for us, this is the player's livelihood. You know, we need to make sure that as heated as we are in the moment, that we're also can calm ourselves, that we're not escalating something to where it derails both of our teams.
Right.
And I really, as a fan, I would have liked to have seen a full strength rematch, you know, throughout the year to really determine who had the better team, because it really is a bummer that played out like that.
Which, yeah,
is likely as a fan, I guess.
And it, I've talked about it a lot before. It disappoints me because I felt like we were better than the Lakers team that you guys beat, which, you know, there are people that will say no way, but I really do. I felt like we were a better team even then. So it was kind of crushing to lose that and lose that in the fashion that we did, but it is what it is. And like you mentioned, this time kind of gives you a different perspective, because I was in high school when all that went down. I hated Ben Wallace. Oh, I hated the Pistons. Like I legitimately hated them. Now, when I say hate, it's more in a like a haha basketball kind of way, where, you know, I enjoy listening to their podcast. I actually collect some Pistons cards now, I guess just because the memories are so strong. You know, I like having a feeling towards a card either way. So I've certainly come around on this thing, but it is interesting to think about the what ifs nonetheless. So as we near the end of today's conversation, I want to give you a chance to talk about some of the centerpieces of your PC, which I'm assuming will cover some of the subjects we've just talked about. And a couple days ago, I asked you to make a list of your three favorite cards, and we've not talked about that since. I basically said, hey, make your list, don't tell me. And now I'm ready to hear them. So let's go ahead and let's hear your three favorite cards here. Tell me a little bit about them, how you acquired them. Let's start with number three, and then we'll end with number one.
Sure. So I really kind of struggled to only pick three, of course. I mean, I think for anyone who's collected for any duration of time, there's a lot of great stories, and the emotional component to collecting is just as strong as looking at the physical card. The one that I'll say is number three for me right now is, it's a game-worn letter from 2007 Topps Letterman of Isaiah Thomas. It's got the super fracture pattern. But it's one of the few true game-worn full letter patches that he has. And so for me, you know, Isaiah's, is the quintessential bad boy from the 80s squad. And so that he represents that era for me. And then I wanted to pick something that goes into the 90s. And then my third card will be for the 2000s. So I thought that was a good way to look at my collection. The thing that I wanted to represent for the 90s is my 1997 PMG Red, Dumars. It feels cliche to say, oh, it's a PMG Red. It's of course a great card, but you know, for me, it was really what it represents in terms of me taking a leap as a collector to say, I'm letting go of a lot of really great cards just to get one in return. And I've always approached collecting from the standpoint, I obviously pay attention to value. I'm not going to give away a $1,000 card to get a $5 card in return, but also wanting to be very intentional about the cards that I'm getting back and being able to recognize this is a card you can't acquire anyway. I don't have the cash to hand out over for one of these. And so for me, it's a tangible reminder that like sometimes you've got to let things hurt a little bit in your collection, things that you're going to miss. But then you have, of course, this great new card that hopefully fills most of that void by the cards that are departing.
Well, and then you might even see in the future that like, hey, that actually, you know, aside, even though you've already you justified it in your mind, it might even make more sense objectively later on. I had a card this week that there was a card that I traded for at the National. It was a cash card trade. And I gave up a lot and I even felt it. And I knew I gave up a lot. And the person I traded with, they knew that I gave them a lot, but that was really the only way it was going to happen. Well, another copy of that finally comes up for sale long after I made that trade. And it went for higher than what I gave up. So, you know, at the end of that, I thought, okay, well, you know, I had already come to peace with what I had done to get it, but it's like, okay, maybe that wasn't so bad after all. You know, even when things are cooling off, that one went at an all-time high. So you've got that Dumars. He's in that teal uniform. You explained your connection to Dumars earlier. I think that was a great move on your part. And I love all the story behind that.
Well, let me bend your ear for one more slightly longer story for my number one card, which is a 2004 Fleer Sweet Sigs Ben Wallace Logo Man. It's probably the most unlikely card in my collection, and I'll try to give you a very brief version of why that is. And it's because this card came up on eBay when I was out with my wife a couple of years ago because her refrigerator had broken.
Okay.
And so for once in my life, I was not glued to my phone looking at, you know, paying attention to alerts or anything else. I was looking at refrigerators and...
About to spend a bunch of money too.
About to spend a lot of money on a refrigerator. And it just so happened at one point, we're getting close to lunch, I pulled out my phone and I had basically been blown up on Instagram by Big Ben PC. And he's like, dude, like, look at this listing. Like, wanted a Logo Man. Like, here's a Logo Man. It just listed, like, you know, message the seller. And, you know, it was one of those, it was high for the time, but not unrealistically. So it was one of those things where, like, you'd probably submit an offer and, like, hold your breath and try not to hit the buy it now button while you're waiting to hear back.
Right. You give yourself, I'll be like, I'm giving this 30 minutes and then I'm hitting the bin.
And importantly, it had the photos of the back, so you could tell that was an actual pack issued copy. You know, the 2004 Fleer sets are rife with faked patches and so on. And this one, luckily, there'd been one other one that sold fairly recently, so you could still see on eBay. I think it was a Vince Carter, but you could see the placement of where the stamp was and compare the font and do a little bit more. So you felt pretty confident. Well, by the time I got on eBay, it had sold. And so I waited till I got home. I checked out Worth Point or 130 Point, and it went for a very reasonable amount. And so I was just like, I was shaking my head, and I reached out to the seller. I messaged him and I said, look, you know, see, you accept an offer, they don't pay, like, I'm your guy. Like, I will do that. And turned out he did pay. So I had the seller send my information to the person who bought it. And I just said, like, respectfully, if you ever, you know, tell them if you ever decide to sell it, there's a guy who's willing to basically allow himself to be gouged to a certain extent for this card. And turned out guy's from Michigan and very friendly, polite. He said, yep, you know, I saw the card. I thought it was a good price, so I wanted to buy it. Well, a couple months after that, he hits me up on Instagram. And he's like, hey, I think he collects Tom Brady before it was fashionable to collect Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And he had gotten some key memorabilia pieces, that were at one of the big auction houses. And he said, I remember you said that you were interested in this card. I have some stuff that is more key to my collecting that I'd like to get. And so here you go. And so we were able to work out a deal and do a deal for that. And it's been in my collection ever since. And I could not believe the dumb luck, of all the times you send the message of, hey, if you're going to sell this, let me know. And it's just like never pans out.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Never work.
And then the funny thing is too, is the seller had said, I took this lower offer too, because the card has some chipping on it. And I just wanted to be fair with the price. I thought of all the of all the grail level cards for a player collector, not only do you get a guy who starts off with a reasonable asking price, is also willing to negotiate fairly based on the card's condition.
Right.
But again, I still can't believe it all worked out for that, because again, that's a card that I think if it came up for auction now, would go for, an amount, again, I just could not possibly justify paying a cash price for. So that's super special to me.
Well, the timing was right. And you made it despite the refrigerator breaking down. I'm assuming you got the refrigerator replaced as well. We're able to spread all those funds out and everything worked out for you. I had a hunch when I asked you for your top three, and I did see that card was pinned on your profile. I said, you know what? That one's probably on there, probably should be on there, but you never know. That's what I like about this activity. And we'll make sure that you get those cards reposted, or I'll try and share some of those cards so when this episode airs, everyone can see that as well. So, Josh, I joke about how much I hate your team. And, everything I said today was obviously in jest. This conversation was a lot of fun for me. I really enjoyed it, especially because our teams have so much history. And I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to come on the show. So before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug your social media handles and then anything you're working on or anything specific that you're looking for. These next few moments here are yours.
Thank you, Kyle. And it's been a pleasure chatting with you. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts around my collecting and around my Pistons fandom. I'm on Instagram as Mitten State Collector. That's my only social media handle that I do for cards. And really, I just want to let anyone who's listening to this know, if you have questions or there's things about cards you want to talk about, or there's any cards you're looking for, please feel free to drop me a message. I'm always more than happy to chat. Countless folks in the hobby who have been so helpful to me over the last couple of years, finding cards, figuring out values for tough cards, any of that, I'm more than happy to return that favor and pay it forward. Aside from collecting Pistons, especially those with the connection to the 2004 team, and Ben Wallace from any of his playing days cards, there's two sets that I'm working on as fun projects. It's just kind of a continuation of, a way of continuing what my uncle started with his form of collecting. The first set I am annoyingly close to finishing. It's the 2013 Spectra set.
Okay.
And I only need one card out of it. It's Nerlens Noel. It's his rookie card. It's his base rookie card. There's two copies of the gold on eBay right now. I don't want gold. I want the base. It's like a $5 card. I'll give someone like $20 for it. It has not shown up in like a year and a half.
Okay. Hold on. Someone out here has that. So if you're listening, I will buy the card if I have to. We got to get this card to Josh. Dig that out of your quarter box. We need this Nerlens Noel. Okay. I'm sorry. Proceed.
Okay. And it's funny. I'm usually not a big Panini person. I know it's fashionable to crap over Panini. I don't crap over Panini for their stuff. I thought Spectra is actually a pretty cool, interesting set. That's why I wanted to build it. But the second one that I'm working on is the Topps and Bowman Master set for Ben Wallace. I have a link on my Instagram profile, the cards that I need. There's actually two that, as far as I can tell, are basically ghost cards that I have not been able to find. The first one is actually, it's two from the same set. It's Rip cards from 2007 Topps. Just like in some of their baseball products, they had Rip cards with a little pull tab on the back where you could open the card and reveal a mini extra short printed one inside. I'm looking for the full size card. There's it's card number 9, card number 29 that have Ben Wallace on them. Don't care if they've been ripped. I just want them for my binder. And the other one that I've been not unable to find even photos of is Ben's 2004 Topps Marks of Excellence auto. It's unnumbered, but from what I can tell from other players in his player group with pack odds, very long odds. There's probably only a couple dozen copies of that card if they were all pack inserted. So those are the ones I'm really looking for in addition to anything else that's on that list. And again, if you have a 2006 Topps Chrome X-Fractor, I'd love to talk to you. You have a 2008 Topps or Bowman Red Refractor, would love to talk to you even more. So that's what I've been working on. And thanks again, Kyle. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. And might be the first episode, though, of your podcast I skip in a while because I'm probably not going to be real psyched to listen to my voice for as long as you've let me talk.
It is a hard thing to do. But Josh, like I said, really enjoyed the conversation today. So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. Well, there you have it. I want to thank Josh again for taking the time to chat about his collection. Maybe there was something we talked about today that resonated with you. Feel free to reach out to me on social media. You can find me on Instagram under @WaxMuseumPodcast or Twitter under the handle @WaxMuseumPC. If you enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to support the show by doing all of your eBay purchasing through the link on my site, which is www.waxmuseumpodcast.com. There's a big eBay logo at the top. Click that, and it should give me a small percentage of whatever you purchase in the 24 hours that follow. Once again, that's www.waxmuseumpodcast.com. In the meantime, if you like the content I'm providing, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcast. Hit up the Podbean site for a link to the merch store. Tag Taco Bell and let them know they can pay me in burritos. And until next time, this is the Wax Museum Podcast.